Congressman Byron Donalds, Florida's 19th district, is on the line. He is running for the seat of governor, as, of course, Governor DeSantis has termed out. He went to FAMU, then he went to FSU, where he graduated. He's originally from New York. Don't hold it against him. He was raised by a single mom. He was in the fall of 2012. He ran for the U.S. House and did not win. He then ran for the Florida House and was there for 4 years. Now he is in the 19th congressional district from 2020 until now. Nominated for speaker two different times under two very different circumstances and endorsed by President Trump. He was a Democrat until 2010, but don't hold that against him. And he's got a background in banking, finance, and credit, and he joins us now. Congressman Byron Donalds, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. So it's been my experience that the difference between being a legislator and being an executive is kind of significant. Rick Scott, he was an executive and then he became an executive in office. Now he's a legislator. I've found it kind of awkward for him. Governor DeSantis was a legislator and a lawyer and he became an executive. And sometimes that's worked, sometimes that hasn't. You're a legislator. Persuade me that you'd be a good executive.
Two important things. One, I spent 17 years of my career in banking, insurance, and financial services. I'm the only person running that actually has a private sector background in finance and in economics. That's one. Two, in my time in Congress, I've spent my time working closely with the leadership about how we craft the legislation to get it off the House floor and into the hands of the executive. Three, my vision is that, number one, we keep the Florida that everybody has come to know and love, but we do have to manage for additional growth. We have to modernize internal operations, streamline them, make sure that they're efficient for the people of Florida, everything from permitting to water quality, water management, and power growth on our power grids. And so I think what that requires is somebody who understands not just the policy side of these things, but also the economic underpinnings of them. And I think that's why I think my skill set translates very well to becoming the state's next governor.
By the way, kudos for giving me a bullet list with subpoints. I love that. You put a one in under your three. I love that. That's fantastic. Let's talk about things that Floridians really care about. I think one of the biggest things that people care about and they complain about right now is housing insurance. It's a huge problem. It seems like any day you might wake up and, oh, it's $2,000. It's $10,000. I mean, I don't know what's going on. Do you have a plan to improve that in Florida?
Yeah, we're actually working through the details of it right now. But in short, I think it's time to relook at Florida's catastrophe fund. By the way, when I was in the Florida House, I chaired the insurance and banking subcommittee. So this is subject matter that I went through when I was in the Florida House. But that being said, I think there's ways where we can make adjustments to Florida's insurance regulatory framework where we can push down costs even further. The tort reform that Governor DeSantis and the legislature brought in back in 2022, we're starting to see the evidence that the loss ratio in our insurance companies is going down. Last year, our insurance companies did not request a rate increase. It's the first time that hasn't happened in about 6-7 years in Florida, which is a good thing. And some of the early data that I'm looking at demonstrates that we might see some rate reductions. I think we have to build on top of that success from Governor DeSantis and then look at the actual regulatory system to turn the dials, for lack of a better phrase, to find ways to further push costs down in Florida. There are ways to do it where it actually requires less dollars coming out of the policyholders in Florida that would directly be seen in people's pocketbooks. The last piece is about the replacement cost. What most people, when they're insuring their property, what I always try to tell people is that you're not insuring what you paid for your house. You're insuring what it costs to replace that house. So one of our initiatives is going to be that if you're in a post-storm environment, you're trying to rebuild your house, your permits are automatic. No more waiting 6 months or 8 months or 10 months to get a permit to rebuild the property that was already permitted and built in our state. If your house is something that has been built after 1993 when we changed the building code after Hurricane Andrew, those permits should be automatic. Anything before that, yeah, the review should happen, of course, because you have to update to the new code, but we don't want that to take forever. And we want to make sure that Florida's governmental operations is there to support communities who are affected by storms when they occur.
By the way, we're talking to Byron Donalds. He is a congressman right now, and he wants to be the next governor, running in the primary as a Republican. How old are your kids, Byron?
22, 18, and 15.
Okay, so the 15-year-old, when you, in my head, I have a, 19 and a 17. When you said 6-7 years, I thought, oh, your 15-year-old would have appreciated that. We're talking to Byron Donalds. The other, obviously right now we have a big issue where the governor has now sprung this 3-day special session I read it as he's deliberately doing that right after the budget because he can threaten line item veto, which he has bragged about being able to use for political retaliation or getting people in line. In any case, the issue is property tax reform, the big chunk of homesteads being, you know, eliminated for property taxes, and the massive hit that would be to local budgets, county and state budgets, you know, tens of millions of dollars a year here in Escambia and Santa Rosa County. Congressman Donalds, what do you think of this property tax reform policy or property tax reform in general?
Well, look, like I said the other day when the governor announced it, I support what the governor's trying to accomplish. Wait, hold on a second. Sorry, my wife has an app on my phone with the gate. Somebody's going to the gate. Anyway.
You can always pause me for talking to your wife. That's 100% allowed. I endorse that decision.
Well, listen, I support what the governor's trying to accomplish, and here's why. Number one, property taxes have doubled in our state over the last decade. They're up massively over the last 5 years. Two, but philosophically, it's your house. Should you really have to rent your house from the government every single year? Should you have to pay a fee to the government every single year to keep your house? I think where a lot of this is going to really get shucking out is over the next couple of days. Let's see what the governor and the legislature come back with, because the governor's put out his proposal and he has his language, but obviously the legislature really is the one in control here. You need 60% of the vote in both chambers. So we'll see what occurs. But I do support what the governor's trying to accomplish because, look, our seniors on fixed income, I mean, they're struggling, man, between taxes and insurance, which are way more than they ever accounted for them to be. Florida's government has to step up and try to get something accomplished. When it comes to local governmental budget, I think that's something that the legislature over these next couple of days is going to try to hammer out as well to see if we can get to a situation that's going to work for homesteaders and the people who call Florida home while making sure we deliver the services, the key services that are critical in every local government.
What do you think about this process? The legislature had session and, you know, the House put up one thing. The Senate never voted on it. You know, the governor never really made a proposal. But now we're calling a special session on a rush with barely any time to work it out. Do you think that's good governance as policy? Like, you know, process wise, I mean?
It's not the best. I'll just tell you that. I think they probably should have handled this in the middle of session. When there was more time to go through this. I mean, but also, let's be very clear, even though there wasn't something put on the floor, I know the House put a bunch of proposals up pretty early, and they settled in on one proposal, but even if you did that, there was still a lot of people talking about this in the background, looking over the details, looking over the numbers. So I don't think people should understand that it's just like some rush process where nobody's been looking at anything. That's not true. I think the members have been going through the data kind of in the background, essentially waiting for the governor to come with his plan. And I think the governor coming with his plan was really going to be the linchpin for all of the activity in Tallahassee.
No, I think that's a fair point. We've been talking about this a lot, and so it would be different if we were out of the blue suddenly rushing a special session to make this happen. One of the things that has been, you know, there are many of us, myself, I'm in this camp. I really loved what Governor DeSantis did in his first term. I mean, I will never stop praising him for how he handled COVID. In the second term, things have not always gone as well. One of the things that here locally we've noticed that I have seen be problems across the state, it's weird little bureaucratic stuff like filling appointments. We had a county commission seat that was vacant for like 10 months. We had a kind of our local water and recycling company. ECUA was vacant for a long time when a member died. And you know, the Escambia Children's Trust has had vacancies. Our boards of trustees on UWF, University of West Florida, and Pensacola State College both had vacancies. So the filling of vacancies I have seen be a problem across the state, just a bureaucratic challenge. But then the use of those vacancies to create political appointments at UWF and PSC has really angered a lot of people locally. What's your philosophy about filling vacancies, about appointments, using them or not using them to political effect, you know, using people in the state, using local recommendations? How will you handle that process?
I think it's a balance. I think you do have to get real input from people in local communities about who has the subject matter knowledge on those issues, who's been around long enough to really understand the dynamics of your local county, while at the same time, you know, looking at it from the state's perspective and what are essentially the economic viewpoints that the state wants to see in those types of positions. And I'll give you an example. Back in 2014, I was appointed as a trustee to Florida Southwestern State College by Rick Scott when he was governor. When I got appointed, people were like, really? But my background was finance also, but a passion for education. So when I got on the board, people were like, okay, this makes sense. I see why Rick Scott made this appointment. But I think it's both. I think the better question to what you're bringing up earlier is making sure that it's done as efficiently as possible. And, you know, people who've worked with me know me is that I don't really like a lot of dead time hanging around. Like, if something has to be done, we're just going to figure out a strategy, work through it pretty quickly, be efficient, and then be responsive to what's happening with some of these boards around the state.
It's an unfair question to ask with such a short time that we have left, about 2 minutes, but obviously Florida went through a redistricting. Looks like that's going to hold up post-Calais. You happen to be, if people don't know, you happen to be Black, you're a Republican. The view of a lot of Black Democrats is that they have been denied seats now because of the redistricting, that this seems like, an odd form of political racism or something like that. What do you think should be done with redistricting? Given Florida's history, given the Calais decision, are you satisfied with the current districts? You tell me what you think.
No, I support the maps that came out, and I think that racial gerrymandering should end in the United States. The Supreme Court is correct. Look, everybody is well aware of America's history. That's why the 65 Voting Rights Act was passed, because of the systematic discrimination by Democrats in the South to stop Black people from voting. That is the history.
This call is being recorded.
That's the history of our country. I don't even know what that is. But
that's okay. It's fine. We're recording it too, so it's fine.
Oh, that's fine. But that being said, if you look at America the last 40 years in our country, there has been no case, no example of systematic discrimination against Black voters, or quite frankly, any voters in America. So racial gerrymandering is not needed. Like I said, when this decision came out, the Democrats are not upset about the end of racial gerrymandering. They are upset about using racial gerrymandering for Democrat power. That's what they're upset about, because if the case allowed for them to build new Democratic seats, they wouldn't say a word about it. The reason they're pissed is because they're losing Democratic seats because they've used racial gerrymandering for their power base, not to the betterment of African Americans in the United States of America.
We're talking to Byron Donalds. I have one last quick question for you, only because of I love the way your brain organizes things. And as a former debater, I have to ask, did you do debate in high school or college?
No, I didn't do debate in high school or college, but I mean, I'm a finance guy. So in finance, you have to be able to look at data and information and distill it.
This call is no longer being recorded.
I guess it's a hook now. But
absolutely.
You have to be able to distill information down to ways you can make key decision making.
I love it. I love people who think in rhetorical elements and sentences and flourishes and poetry. I love people who think in bullets and structure and outlines. And I think really to be a good leader, you kind of have to do both. And it sounds like you do both. Hey, great to meet you for the first time. I really appreciate anybody who runs for political office. I'm too much of a coward to do it. Also, I don't think I could ever be elected. So, I can argue it either way you want to go. But Byron Donalds, he is a congressman from Florida. He is running for governor. He is currently a congressman, but best of luck in the primary. Sir, thank you for the time this morning, and I hope to get to talk to you again soon.
Definitely. See you soon.